Hello and welcome to this course on developing a time management discipline. My name is Enoch Bartlett Sears and I'm the publisher at Business of Architecture. This course was originally recorded as part of the Business of Architecture Summit in 2014. This course is registered with AICES for continuing professional education, and any credits that you earn as an AIA member will be reported for you, and certificates of completion are available upon request. Developing a time management discipline. Today's presenter is Steve L. Wintner, AIA Emeritus, a licensed architect since 1968, retired from active practice in 1985. In the course of his career, Steve served as the managing principal of a small firm partnership and the VIP director of operations for two of the largest architectural firms in the country. In 1985, he started his second career as a management consultant with a commitment to make a difference in the professional design industry by serving design professionals and assisting them in the achievement of their goals through his body of knowledge and experience in the industry. This commitment has led to his developing a series of workshops which have been presented to national, state, and local AIA chapters since 1992. His financial management workshop is the basis of a book that he co-authored with Michael Tardif, Financial Management for Design Professionals, The Path to Profitability, which is currently in a rewrite as of this recording for its second edition to be released by the end of 2014. In this course, you will discover the true value of time management, and you'll really understand why it's so important that you have a very strict time management, how it can affect your bottom line and your profitability. You'll learn insight on the importance of a timely and accurate daily timesheet. You will also discuss the factors supporting the concept of the timesheet being one of the most important financial resources of every professional design firm. You'll also understand how time management and these recording principles relate to the long-term profitability of a firm. And you'll also understand how to develop a consistent daily time management discipline and its role in establishing a culture of accountability within a firm. So with that, I'll turn it over to today's presenter, Steve L. Wintner, AIA.
Thanks, Enoch. Hello and welcome to each of you. I'm delighted that you've chosen to join us for this next hour or so to learn why developing and adopting a time management discipline for your firm would be worth considering. This is a topic that I'm kind of passionate about because primarily I've experienced firsthand the financial benefits that accrue to those firms that I work with who have implemented such a discipline. I want you to understand that this presentation has been developed and is directly focused on professional design firms that have at least one employee other than the firm owner. This material, however, is applicable and beneficial whether the firm has one employee or thousands of employees. Now, if you happen to be a sole practitioner and you don't currently have any employees but plan on expanding your firm in the future, I believe you'll find this material to be quite helpful in the future. Wonder how many of you understand what that number means, 168. That's really a rhetorical question, but it's in the context of time management that I ask if you know what the significance of this is. The fact is that we all have the same amount of time. What's important about this is that it's how we choose to spend this time. If you recognize that the 160 hours represents the number of hours in a week, you're correct. We all can choose how we do this, and you know that we all have choices to make. And we spend our hours each week, whether it's sleeping, eating, exercising, relaxing, interacting with others, so on. But in this presentation, my focus is going to be on the approximate 25% of those 168 hours each week that we spend working in the office, and then specifically how these hours spent on our projects are captured on a timesheet. Before we get to discussing the impact of how these hours are actually captured, I want to review with you for your consideration the following seven myths about time management. The first one is activity, and the myth is individuals who are the most active get the most done. That's not necessarily true. We tend to confuse activity with results. Insecure workers often work at energy levels inversely proportional to their certainty of direction and confidence in the results. Activity, initially designed to achieve predetermined ends, ultimately becomes the end in itself. Number two, decision level. The myth is that the higher the level at which a decision is made, the better the decision. That's not necessarily true either. Most times it's not true. There's a notion that people who are paid more money must make smarter decisions. Therefore, the more decisions that are made at the top, the better off the whole organization will be. Well, actually, decisions should actually be made at the lowest possible level that's consistent with good judgment and availability of relevant facts and the appropriate people to make those decisions. Among the justifications for this principle is the obvious fact that the higher level decisions cost more to make, while the lower level decisions are based on greater familiarity with the circumstances involved. The third myth, efficiency. The most efficient individual is the most effective. Not at all. They're two different things. We know that being efficient on the wrong task would be highly ineffective. So what's the point in trying to do more cheaply what shouldn't be done at all? Efficiency then might be termed as doing things at the right time, whereas effectiveness would be doing the right things right the first time. Number four. The harder one works, the more that gets done. That doesn't necessarily translate. The time management principle of planning has proven that every hour spent in effective planning saves 3 to 4 hours in execution and ensures better results. So the key to the hard work syndrome is work smarter, not harder, to get more done in less time. The fifth myth has to do with delayed decisions, and the myth is that delaying a decision improves the quality of the decision. That's not necessarily accurate, nor is it true. Most times it's not. Arriving at the point of decision, many of us instinctively delay or procrastinate to avoid the commitment which follows the final decision. This syndrome has been termed paralysis by analysis by seasoned observers. Often the longer a difficult decision is delayed, the more difficult it becomes to make. Also, each delay lessens the time available for taking corrective action if it's the wrong decision. Number six, time shortage. There is never enough time. That is definitely a myth. Time shortage is just an illusion that results generally from such forms of mismanagement as attempting to do too much in too little time. The inability to say no to outside distractions, setting or accepting unrealistic time estimates, and confusing priorities by working on less important issues. And finally, I can do it faster and better. The myth is that people who don't want any mistakes to be made should and will do it themselves. Well, that's not an effective way of dealing with things. It's not an efficient way of dealing with things. So, the delegation of work is a skill that is initially an investment of their time in teaching others, which will, in time, result in enormous rewards with greater effectiveness and efficiency. Those in senior management positions would benefit from adopting the concept to only do what only you can do and delegate the rest. Hopefully, some, if not all, of these debunked myths will resonate with you. However, these were all about the general subject of time management. But now I want to get down to the real heart of the issue of time management. So the remainder of this presentation is going to focus on my first learning objective, to bring to you the insight about what is important about a timely and accurate daily timesheet. I'm going to go back to this issue of time, since this is the primary topic. We know that design professionals sell only one product, time. Therefore, time is money to all professional design firms. Now, part of this that's interesting is that the timesheet plays such an important role in this. And we need to understand that the idea of completing a timesheet has never been a focus of the operation of a firm. It just happens to be one of those things that each of us has been required to do, and a lot of us find that to be just such an annoying process for us. And we tend to put it off, procrastinate, and leave it to the very last minute. Most staff members, if nudged by their accounting person, will sooner or later get around to doing that timesheet. But it's almost always a low priority for most of the staff and for most of the principal. And there's absolutely no intention to having the time entered be completely accurate. It's basically close enough is good enough. Well, that's not really true, and it's really not. In fact, it could be quite costly to the firm. When completing your timesheet, why is the completing a timesheet in an accurate and timely manner not given any priority? These are two questions that are not rhetorical questions. Well, why is it considered important enough to get done before leaving the office each evening? So the answer for these two questions is the same, essentially because the timesheet is not recognized as one of the most important financial resources of every professional design firm. If it were recognized as such, it would enhance a firm's financial metric. Now, I'm sure that for most of you, if not all of you, hearing this statement might be very difficult to buy into it. But if we go back to what was said just two slides previously about time being money to each and every professional design firm, then I assert that this statement is the next logical conclusion. And just because no one, other than the accounting staff, has made a big deal about timesheet doesn't discount that it is a big deal. So we're all going to have to explore some of the factors that will demonstrate how big a deal it actually is. This is learning objective number two. Discussing the factors supporting the statement that a timesheet is one of the most important financial resources of every professional design firm. Fact number one, time is the single largest cost of professional design services and a key factor in determining project and firm profitability. Fact number two, timely and accurate timekeeping is vital to calculating key financial performance indicators. It's my understanding that most of the participants in this webinar represent small and or small sole proprietor firms with maybe one, maybe no employees. For each of you, the issue of profitability for your projects will no doubt determine how long and if your firm will survive in this highly competitive marketplace. Up until now, you might not have given much thought to these factors. But I can tell you for certain that focusing on the time that you spend and how accurately you capture the hours will make a very big difference in the long term. Given the size of your firm, you may not have previously developed any of these key financial performance indicators that I refer to. But knowing what your firm's true overhead costs and rate is, and knowing its true net multiplier will be enormously helpful in the development of more competitive and more potentially profitable future proposed project fees. Without these key financial performance indicators, it will continue to be nothing more than your best guess in your response to a client's request for a proposal. Not sure what's going on. So let's move on. I'd like you to consider these assertions. These are based on my background and my experience, and I feel very comfortable in making these assertions and asking you to consider the importance in your firm's financial future. You may choose to think of these assertions as nothing more than my opinion, but let's go through them. Prompt and accurate timekeeping is the core of a sound financial management system for all professional design firms. The first step in developing a sound financial management system begins with establishing a method to record and capture time daily and accurately. Without timely and accurate timesheets, a firm's finances would at best be difficult to manage and certainly complicate the calculation of its true profitability. I've used this word true now a number of times, and I just want to explain what I mean by that. It's my belief and assertion that in the lack of accuracy in filling out a timesheet, what basically develops is a distortion to the real financial performance indicators, because you're not using actual hours. You're using your best guess at those hours. Whereas if you actually captured those hours accurately, appropriately each day, then you would basically come back to a place where you would be able to identify these true financial indicators for your projects and for your firm. Accurately captured time entered into the accounting software system becomes the foundational data for calculating several of these key financial performance indicators. These include two of the following: the net multiplier and the overhead rate. Those are two things that you absolutely really need to know to help you develop an appropriate fee for the next proposal that you do, so that you're not just guessing at what that fee would be, and it's not just based on what the last fee was and how well you did. All of those factors become a part of that decision-making, but knowing your net multiplier and your overhead rate are the essential facts for you to have in your pocket so you can make the best possible decision. This is not just an opinion. These are statements based on my previous experience and the benefits that have accrued to those firms that have found out about these things and have learned how to do this. I want you to see this in the context of money, because I think, as we said, time is money. So, by failing to consistently and accurately capturing these hours spent on your projects, the greater the likelihood will be that this will negatively impact the profitability of those projects, which in turn will have other unfavorable impacts on these two KPIs, the key financial performance indicators. What you need to see is the simple reality that for every dollar that you spend on an expense, whether it's direct labor, indirect labor, or non-reimbursable expenses, there's a dollar less profit available. Putting that into some form of an equation, time spent on direct project labor dollars plus indirect overhead labor dollars plus the non-reimbursable expenses that you incur equals a debit to the revenue, which equates to lost profit. In this case, you'll notice that the direct project labor is also an expense. However, since direct labor is the source of the firm's revenue and profitability, it plays a more significant role than the indirect labor does or the non-reimbursable expenses do. Specifically, in the calculation of the net multiplier and the overhead rate, the direct labor is the denominator in that calculation. So it's very natural for me to conclude that not completing your timesheet in a timely way with accurate hours in the same day that the hours are spent, you will likely wind up having to guess at what your hours were, which means that you will be guessing too high or too low and will rarely ever be accurate. Worse, if you wait until the end of the week or the end of the pay period to enter your time, these untimely poor guesstimates could, in one form or another, result in lost revenue and potential profit. Now, for those of you, this is a caveat. If you have been diligent in logging your time in some manner throughout the day, then you're on the right track, and I applaud you for doing so. So now let's take a look at the next learning objective, number 3. exploring the long-term implications on key financial performance indicators, which in turn impact project and firm profitability when timesheets are not completed and submitted in a timely and accurate manner. Okay, there's going to be two possibilities here. You're going to either overestimate your hours or you're going to underestimate your hours. So I'm going to start with looking at what happens and what are the impacts when you overestimate your project hours. Overestimating these project hours would, number one, reduce the available project fee budget hours, if in fact there is a project fee budget that you're working from, which to my dismay, so many firms don't do that for each of their projects. But it would necessarily use up the remaining fee that's in that budget before the project is actually completed, which would obviously result in a reduction in the project profitability and the firm profitability. Overestimating project hours would also impact the project's retrievable history that might distort, in this case, increase the key financial performance indicator used to develop proposed fees for future similar projects. Overestimating these project hours, if you use these distorted key financial performance indicators, could lead to higher, less competitive proposed fees than fees that might be developed based on more accurate actual hours spent and their related key financial performance indicators. This could result in losing future projects to competitors, which I know that none of us want to do. And then finally, coming in with overestimated hours for your project would reduce your project workload and the profitability naturally, which would negatively impact future bonuses and salary increases. Obviously, if workload is down, if the size of the project fee is less, your profitability is going to be less, and you're going to wind up not having the opportunity to consider future bonuses and salary increases under that kind of a scenario. I want to put this now into the context of a sample or a scenario for a hypothetical project. Let's take a look at a five-week phase for a project called Project X. And if we assume the following things, it'll help us get a picture of where we're going to go with this. Assume that there's going to be four team members assigned to this project to do this phase, and that each of those team members will have an average hourly rate of $75 an hour. We're going to assume that the project fee budget will allow for 600 hours for this phase of the work. If you look at the dollars that are going to be allocated for this five-week phase, you just simply use the $75 times the 600, and it'll come up with a phase budget of $45,000. Within that $45,000, if we allow for a 20% profit in the fee, it's going to be $9,000 as an estimated profit if everything goes well. Okay, so let's look at it in the context of overestimated hours for this five-week phase. We talked about the phase hours being 600, but let's look at what happens when you overestimate the hours and you actually record 660 hours for that amount of time. You're going to wind up losing 60 hours by overestimating. When you look at it in the context of the difference between overestimating and actually capturing the time that you did spend because you properly recorded the actual hours spent in a timely and accurate way, those hours might look like 592 hours, which let's say that in this particular case, it came in under the budgeted number of hours by 8 hours. Well, that's always helpful because those hours can now be used on another phase of the project that follows. What's the impact on the project fee that's been budgeted by those overestimated hours? Well, We've gone through this and we've looked at it and we said if you spend 660 hours at $75 an hour, it's going to generate a cost for your direct labor of $49,500. Whereas the actual hours budgeted at 600 hours would be $45,000. So there's a distortion here now. What you've actually done is you've reduced the profit available from $9,000 to $4,500. Looking at it from the standpoint of the actual hours have been captured and entered, those actual hours at 592 hours would generate a direct labor cost of $44,400. Taking that from the budgeted hours, you can see that you actually have increased your profitability by $600. So when you look at this, there's an overall swing of $5,100 in the profitability on this project. That becomes a real issue for any firm. And this becomes compounded as you go through one phase after another. So you begin to see that the impact of overestimating can be a real issue in terms of what it does to the project's profitability in the long term. Let's take a look at it if we look at it from the standpoint of underestimating your project hours. If you did that, then it would create a misleading progress report for each of your projects that would indicate a greater number of hours being available than what are actually available from the project fee budgets. If you underestimated these project hours, as it is with the overestimated hours, it would impact the project's retrievable history and also distort the key financial performance indicators, which would result in lower fees with a lower profit margin for any proposed future similar project. If you underestimated those hours for the project, it would mislead your upper management as to the firm's true profitability. Again, that word true being very issue, much of an issue here. Because when it comes time to consider performance bonuses and salary increases, these KSPIs will not likely support what's going to be necessary to look at the possibility of giving performance bonuses and salary increases. And they could, in fact, impact closely related key factors that affect other decisions. Underestimating these hours would, in addition to the net multiplier and overhead rate, these other key financial performance indicators impacted would include the utilization rate for the firm and each employee, the net revenue for each employee, and the profit-to-earnings ratio for each firm. All right, well, let's look at this from the standpoint of its financial impact on the project. Again, we knew that we had allocated 600 hours for the project based on the fee budget. Underestimating in this case, let's say that they underestimated and they came up with 580 hours instead of what it should have been. So here you've gained 20 hours, which might seem like a good thing, but it's really more than it should be, because we go back to the other scenario where we looked at the 592 hours that were actually spent versus the 600 hours budget, and you can see we're back to that same plus 8 hours of gained remaining hours from the project fee budget. So you've got a 12-hour swing here that is really a distortion. That has an impact on the project fee budget. Looking at, again, the underestimated hours for the direct labor using the 660 hours spent at $75, you come up with a cost of $43,500. And when you subtracted that from the budgeted fee hours of 600, you're going to see that you're going to wind up with a distortion which creates an increase in profitability of $1,500. Now, that might seem like a good thing, but it's truly not, because it's not real. It's misleading. It's a distortion of the reality of things. If you look at what actually happened in the 592 hours that were spent, the cost of that is actually $44,400. Which is an increase of only $600 or $900 less. But it's what's real, and it's what can be counted upon instead of having this false image of what the $1,500 could possibly do. And if that gets compounded from phase to phase, it could create a real misleading idea for the face for the partners when they start to consider things for the operations and the policies for the firm, including bonuses and salary increases. So the thing about this is that we can look at what happens when you develop consistent time management discipline and what's its role in establishing a culture of accountability within every professional design firm. I believe that it's important for every firm to take aside every new employee and provide an orientation process. For the smaller firms, it's going to be a lot less formal than it will be for the larger firms. But orientation for a new employee is very important. However, I think that it's almost always overlooked and not a part of that orientation to talk about the importance of how to complete a timesheet in a timely and accurate manner, mostly because it's not part of the policy of the firm to even think about that. It's not been part of the discipline of the firm to do that. And sadly, it's been my experience that principals will tend to be the worst offenders of that particular policy. So it's important that you explain to the new employee the importance of enabling the firm to invoice its clients in a timely manner, which cannot really be done without a timely, accurate timesheet. That's why accounting people are always after the staff to complete their timesheet so they can get the invoices out, because they have to base it upon some percentage of completion of the time that's been spent on the project. And if it's being done on an hourly basis fee, then it certainly is a necessity to have those hours. And it's, again, certainly necessary that those hours be accurate. It also is important in measuring the financial performance of every project and to continually measure and monitor the financial health and growth of the firm. Now, it doesn't matter how adept we might be at remembering things. We all know that if you attempt to accurately remember how our time was spent, even as little as 8 hours ago, let alone at the end of the week or at the end of the pay period, it's going to be more about guessing than being accurate. This could prove to be very costly to the firm, and I would say to every employee as well. For this reason, I encourage any firm leader to consider the adoption of these following specific protocols to enhance the importance of accurate and timely capturing of time spent each day. This time management discipline for each employee and each principal might improve if some or all of the following protocols were adopted as a firm policy. A daily timesheet from the principal and each employee, including any part-time employee, is to be completed and saved electronically no later than the end of each business day to ensure the success of this process. I know that for some of you that seems like a lot, but if you stop and think about it, the number of hours that you spent or the amount of time that you spend at the end of a week trying to recapture how you spent your time gets to be a real process that's frustrating for you. I know, I've been there, I've done that, until I learned otherwise and became more disciplined. However, it's very important that it be broken down in a daily process. The optimum procedure would entail entering the hours spent on the daily timesheet initially for the morning hours before you leave for lunch and again for the afternoon hours before leaving the office for the day. That way you've broken it down into smaller bites. It's easier to capture. The likelihood of it being even more accurate than trying to figure it out at the end of the day is there for you, and beneficial to the firm and to your projects. So it's the optimum way of approaching this particular discipline. The next thing would be that the timesheet should be submitted no later than Friday or at the end of the week, just before the leaving the office for the day. So accounting coming into the office on Monday would have all of the timesheets accurately and timely submitted for them to begin working on developing the invoices. To ensure that the time that's been spent on the project is recorded as accurately as possible in no less than, let's say, 15 to 30 minute increments, unless you've been authorized otherwise by a principal, everyone is encouraged to make every effort to adopt these following procedures. The first one would be to set up a time log. I had mentioned before, if you're capturing your time right now by logging it in some form, you're on the right track and you're doing the right thing. So using a time log will help to facilitate this process and eliminate this guessing and this trying to remember, even for 4 hours. So if you recorded this time spent at the start and the conclusion of each new activity for each phase in each project, you're going to find out that you're going to have much better, more accurate, timely hours captured. Now, if you're working on only one activity on the same project for the entire day, then obviously remembering how the time was spent will be a lot easier. However, I think in the case of small firms, this is less likely to be the case because in a small firm, and I know having been the principal of my own small firm at one time, there are too many things going on. You're working on multiple things. You're multitasking. You're doing many, many different kinds of things, including many different projects. So it's not likely to be that way. It works that way perhaps in the larger firm, but not so much for the smaller firm. In these instances, when it is something that you only do one project, one phase, one activity, it's reasonable to save your timesheet at the end of the day because it's simply easy to remember. However, if your time is spent working on multiple tasks or multiple projects, then I encourage you to embrace the discipline of using a time log to record your time spent prior to starting a new task and or project, which will facilitate the completion of your daily timesheet, as I've indicated in the optimum item two, number two above. Number five, it's important that all time entries be accurate and appropriately detailed and complete, and there will be random reviews of timesheets, which could occur at least once a week. Time entered should be carefully reviewed during the invoicing process, however, and any modifications and or clarifications for changes should be requested accordingly. So with those things in mind, we face now the idea of looking at changes to be made. And I understand that change is difficult for most people. Embracing change is not an easy thing to do. But it's one of those certainties. They say that the only thing you can be sure of is death and taxes. Well, I'm here to tell you that there's another one. It's called change. If you remain static, if you don't change, if you don't adapt, if you don't improve, you're going backwards. If you're not going forwards, you're going backwards. You're never standing still. So with any change and with any transition to a new protocol or a new policy, it requires two things, commitment and discipline, if it's ever to succeed. And in my opinion, this commitment must come first and foremost from the firm leader and the rest of the principals in the office, or this process is very little chance of succeeding. I believe that a focused effort and commitment on the part of every member of every firm will, over time, reap enhanced returns for its project. I've experienced that. The firm benefits, each employee who contributes to the success of this time management discipline also benefits. So I encourage you to totally embrace this as being a policy and a procedure that you want to undertake as a discipline in looking at the timesheet in a brand new light. I thank you for your time. We will take questions, but this concludes the formal portion of my presentation. And I'm delighted that you signed on and that you found this to be a topic of interest. I think it's of great value to every firm. And it's my intention to try to bring the focus on this topic to each of the firms that I work with, and I have had great success in getting principals of the firms to see the merits of it and in the long term reap the benefits of making this changeover to such a discipline. It's a lot easier than doing it the way it's been done, and everybody in the firm is going to be a whole lot better off and a whole lot happier having found this new approach and taken this new approach. So thank you. I appreciate your time and your interest. It's open for questions now.
Yep. Thank you, Steve. So I'm just looking through the questions right now, you know, and one thing that I really picked up from this presentation, Steve, was how time tracking actually has ripple effects and the larger picture that it's not just being, you know, lazy or careless or haphazard about time tracking, but can actually influence the tightness of proposals and stuff like that. So I'm interested to know, people on the line, what you thought of this presentation. Please give us your feedback. And we'll talk here. If anyone wants to have their line open and speak directly with Mr. Winter, please raise your hand. You can do that through your GoTo Webinar control panel,
will unmute your line, and then you can talk, and we can all hear you. So that's a really nice way to have an interactive conversation. So Greg mentioned that he was hoping you would touch upon information about techniques for staff to plan and budget their time in advance. Do you have any suggestions along those lines, Steve?
Well, it's not so much the staff planning and budgeting their time. I think that's the responsibility of the project principal, the principal in charge. As I said, I believe and I adhere to the policy, and I try to get each of my clients to adopt the policy of having a project fee budget developed in response to every new project proposal you receive. Because trying to come up with a proposed fee without going through a budget, which allocates time to the people who are going to work on the project, having a clear understanding of the scope of services, the number of hours that each of the tasks are going to undertake to complete those scope of services becomes the basis for the budget. And it allows for a more realistic approach to getting the project done, which is why if you have a project fee budget, the likelihood is that your profitability will probably be greater than it would be if you just did this on a guesstimate or a scientific wild-ass guess, as I say, a swag. Without this kind of planning and budgeting for the time to be spent based on the scope of service.
Excellent. Thank you.
So that budget, by the way, should then be given, it should be made a document that is given to each of the staff members that are assigned to the project. So they know going into each phase of the project what's going to be their assignment, the number of hours that they will have. They don't need to know the number of dollars. That's not critical. But the hours are the critical thing because they become the dollars. But they need to know what is their allocated number of hours to complete an assignment that they're being delegated. That doesn't happen that often, and that's very disturbing to me, and I don't understand why. It's so logical to me that you would provide this information. It's about effective communication and being in touch with your staff and allowing them to know and understand what's expected of them so they can succeed.
Now, Steve, I know that you're also working on some additional information about accountability in design firms.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about your insight on that?
Well, it's all tied into the same thing. I mean, this is a very good example and exactly the first place that I start with my clients to introduce this topic of accountability. It's been my experience over the last 29 years of being a management consultant, that the actual, the environment, the culture of a firm is not in a culture of accountability. It's mostly a CYA. It's mostly taking care of yourself. It's mostly about protecting yourself and not stepping up to the plate. Well, to me, that's all about integrity. That there's no reason in the world why a professional, we're all highly educated, professional, licensed, engaged, smart, intelligent people. There's no reason why we shouldn't want to take responsibility for the things that we do. And so creating a culture of accountability begins with taking responsibility for the very first thing that's expected of you, and that is to be able to capture your time that you spend in an accurate and timely way. That builds onto every other thing that comes from that. It mostly has to do about communication in one form or another. But it's essentially communicating effectively and clearly, getting other people to be a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. Because if you get everybody moving in the same direction through this culture of accountability, everyone will benefit. It's logical that there will be a benefit to everybody, including the firm. And so it's to the betterment of the firm, it's to the betterment of the employee, it builds a stronger, more productive, more profitable firm, and everybody comes out of that having benefited in some way or another. So there's no reason to avoid this. It's just a matter of how you go about doing it. This is the first step in this process.
Steve, do you have any software recommendations for small firms, 1 to 5 people? That's Peter's question.
Well, you know, I don't make recommendations because I don't know the firm. So it's very difficult for me to make a recommendation to a firm that I don't know about. When I work with a firm, I get to know about them. I get to know how they operate. I get to know what their culture is. I get to know what their goals and their mission is. I get to understand more about what's important to them, what they're trying to accomplish. And I get to understand more about their financial resources, so I'm better able to suggest to them. And even then, it's really more of a suggestion about things that they might try, consider as a way of adopting some kind of a software program.
Well, I know that Peter. I was just going to say, I know that Peter is on the line. So, Peter, if you did want to talk and provide some more information, we can do that. Another question that we're getting here, Steve, is on timesheets. When there are small tasks, phone calls, interruptions, et cetera, do you have any suggestions for aggregating that data or keeping track of those?
That's another reason why the time log works so well. It allows you to just make note of the fact that you've been on the phone for 10 minutes. Well, I've said in the presentation that it really is about capturing your time in 15 to 30-minute increments. That's up to each of the firm leader to decide what the policy is for the firm. Some firms do it on 30 minutes. It's a matter of rounding up, rounding down. As long as there's a policy in place, and as long as it's consistent, and it has to be, that's another one of these issues of accountability, to communicate what it is that you're expecting your employees to do so they can respond accordingly and appropriately. So I think that you should be able to bundle those things so that you know that you're going to have a certain amount of non-productive time. Now, if it's project phone conversations, that's fine, as opposed to, let's say, business development or marketing phone conversation.
Yep.
So you can capture those things accordingly, and that's another reason for doing this on the time log, because it allows you then at the end of the 4 hours or the end of the day to see how that time was actually spent and then be able to more accurately bundle those kinds of incremental minutes that are spent doing those small things.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. If anyone has a follow-up question, please ask it. Josh is asking here about net multipliers and overhead rate. Can you explain a little how they're calculated and how you use them? I'm going to defer that question, Josh. I'm going to point you to OSHA Wilson's presentation later on in the summit, where she'll actually be addressing that directly. I think that's probably a little too broad of a subject to go to here. Can you describe that in one or two sentences, or should we just defer that question about net multipliers and overhead rate, Steve?
Well, I think the only thing I want to say is what I already presented in my presentation, and that is that keeping in mind that your time spent on projects is direct labor, and that direct labor number becomes the denominator in the calculation of those two key financial performance indicators. Another reason why the accuracy and timeliness of those hours spent is so important and critical.
Excellent. Thank you, Steve. And I do point people forward to OSHA Wilson. We'll go into that a little bit deeper. So we'll do that. Chris, I'm going to open up your line here because I see your hand is up. So if you have a microphone, we'll let you talk to us. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you great.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Awesome. Well, I was listening to the presentation, and of course, spoke to me quite a bit about keeping your timesheets every day. I tend to wait till the end of the week to do that, and it's an inefficient process. But my question specifically was regarding to, we're primarily a residential firm, and we have clients coming in that some of them take quite a bit longer to complete, even though the scope of the project is very similar from project to project. Sometimes they want to see a lot of different variations, and so it's very hard sometimes up front to guesstimate the amount of hours that really go into a project up front. So I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were when that sort of a situation comes up. What's the best way to handle that, and how do you add some maybe something into the process so that you can buffer for that in some way?
Chris, that's an excellent question. Thank you. Actually, what we're really talking about, the term that's been coined, is called scope creep. There's a lot about that out there, but essentially what this comes down to is again, another kind of discipline. In coming up with a fee for a potential client or an existing client who brings you a new project, you need to gain from them the information they have about their project. What is the project about? Most importantly, above all things, is to be able to get from them a program scope of services and the program requirements. So you have a clear understanding of what it is they're expecting. The discussion about how many design scenarios you should be developing versus how many meetings you should be attending versus how many times should you be going out to the construction site to look at the construction work underway are not things to discuss when they're happening. They're things to discuss before you sign your contract. Those things have to be enumerated and expelled out in the basic scope of services. Otherwise, they're going to fall into the category called additional services, which you should be paid additional compensation. And that's the area of scope creep. Our firms somehow or other seem to think that when the client asks you to do something that's not in the scope of services in your contract, you can't possibly ask for more money because it'll upset them. If it's a good client, they're expecting you to do something they know they didn't ask you to do in the first place. And if it's a good client, they're going to agree that they should be paying for that service. If they don't, if they think they should be getting it for free, then it's time to consider whether that client is really someone you want to be working with. But all of that can be avoided. All of that kind of interaction can be avoided if it's all discussed and clearly understood and spelled out at the very start of the project. Even just asking the question. And I think that's the responsibility of the firm principal, is to ask the client a question that you want answered about what their needs are. How many times do you want to meet on it? How often do you want me to go to the site? How many design scenarios are we going to do in each phase? And then put that into your fee proposal. And then it takes care of the issue. Any thoughts? Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm here. I muted my phone while I was listening to you. I think that there is a lot to said about that. It's difficult sometimes to really gauge from a client or have a client understand exactly how many meetings that, you know, they need to have or how many design versions. You know, everybody thinks that, you know, they get a pretty good idea of what they want and, you know, you should be able to get it on the first go, and that very rarely happens. We've got, you know, some clients that they just want to see several variations on the thing. So it's a little bit hard to gauge sometimes. You know, we do try to allow within our contract and within the scope of service a certain number of redesigns. We've been a little bit lax in really defining during the process, you know, what's an actual reworking of the plan. So it's led to some inefficiencies with that, and we're trying to be a little bit more diligent with that. So I think that's probably one of the keys for us personally in making sure that clients have a good communication understanding of when a project really is going back to the drawing board and starting back over again from scratch.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I understand. I really do empathize. I know what you're talking about, and it's not uncommon. Again, I'm going to go back and put the onus of responsibility back on you, the principal, because it is our responsibility as architects to understand our clients' ability to comprehend what they're asking for and to educate them where they don't. And we do that by asking open-ended questions so that we can draw them out to find out what they do know and don't know, what they do understand and they don't understand. It's an investment of time in that initial meeting with the client, in the time of where you're doing your proposal writing and your fee development process, that is overhead. It's business development time. It's the time that you spend trying to get this project resolved before you sign the contract. But it's the time at which all these things can be adhered to. Now, it's very reasonable that they don't know. Gee, I don't know. So they're going to look to you for suggestions, which is very reasonable. And so in your best understanding of what they're asking for and what they're looking for and your understanding of their sophistication with the process, you can suggest the number of these design scenarios per phase or the number of meetings per phase. And you can then make the stipulation that we believe that this is an adequate number for each of these things. However, if you should find that they're not after the fact, then we can add more and we would charge you incrementally a unit price for each of those additional meetings, each of those additional design scenarios. Or we can increase the number right now to give you a comfort level. But it's not something to discuss after the fact, because you're going to wind up on the losing end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's very helpful. I appreciate your insight there.
You're very welcome. I'm sure that you'll do a lot better. I applaud you for bringing it up, because it's a universal problem that each firm has. You're not alone in this thing just because you're doing residential work. It happens on the biggest projects.
Sure.
It's all about communication.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Any more? Enoch?
Yep, I'm here, Steve. So I was just, I just wanted to read out a comment here from Timothy. Great comment. And he says, I've been working with a business coach that has opened my eyes in many ways. I cannot agree more with this material. Seeing the documented hours has greatly increased my profitability and made it easier to justify fees I used to think were too high, because I have the historical data to justify it. We're a husband and wife firm, and even sole proprietors have one employee themselves. And as Steve said, the principal can be the most difficult employee. You can be your own biggest PITA, P-I-T-A. Speaking from experience, learning the hard way. Good info, Steve. So thank you, Timothy, for that. More of just a general comment, Steve.
Yeah, great. Very good. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yep. One of the things that that Luis has mentioned here, and I know you did touch on it a little bit in your presentation, he asked, can you discuss how time tracking affects billable rates, and how often do you suggest that a firm review their rates?
Yes, that's an excellent question, Luis. I'll go backwards. I think the firm ought to assess their billing rates every quarter. Again, it depends on the size of the firm. It depends on the amount of work, what your workload is. It may not require that much of a review that frequently, but usually every quarter for a reasonable size firm, mid-size firm, medium-size firm, even small firms should do that, depending on, again, the activity level. If there's a lot of activity, it should be looked at. The point of that is that you need to capture what your overhead rate is. The overhead rate, if you can identify the true overhead rate for your firm, you can apply that to each individual employee and build an hourly billing rate and build into it the 20% profitability that you deserve, instead of winding up with whatever you wind up with to meet the expectations of a client. And you can control that negotiation, and that's the topic of another webinar. But the point of it is that I think that each employee needs to have an assigned amount of a break-even rate, which comes from the overhead rate. It's just simply your overhead rate plus the amount of your hourly salary. And then you take from that and you put your profit on it. And that becomes the hourly billing rate. And doing that once a quarter to make sure that you're on track, and I would assert that it isn't about being competitive in the marketplace so much. You have the opportunity and the responsibility to becoming an astute financial steward of your resources, your financial resources, and that mostly includes monitoring and managing your overhead expense. You want to reduce your overhead. As I said in this presentation, your overhead, your expenses, direct labor, indirect labor, and non-reimbursable expenses, reduce your profitability. Every dollar that goes to those kinds of expenses reduces your profit by a dollar. So you need to manage your overhead expenses more appropriately. Just another reason why getting your direct labor hours to be more accurate and more timely is such a critical issue.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Steve, for that comment. Another good question here from Rick, which is more of a tactical thing. What is the expected time allowed to a client once an invoice is submitted? 5 days, 30 days? What are you seeing, Steve, and what do you recommend?
That's a good question. I would tell you that the industry suffers so badly from collecting on their invoices. My personal recommendation to my clients is that they deserve, now understand that's the operative word, they deserve to be paid within 30 days of the date of the invoice. Not when they received it, because you can't tell when they receive it, it doesn't matter. The date of the invoice, and your invoice should have that stipulated at the bottom of it. Payment is due within 30 days of the date of this invoice. And you should also have it built into your contract to have a penalty, an assessed fee for not making that payment on time. So a late fee, just like you get charged from your credit card when you don't make your payments on time. You notice if you look at your business card, there's nothing on your business card that includes the word bank, lender, savings, anything to do with they're keeping your money from getting to you. It's your money. You've earned it. You deserve to be paid for it. So for me, 30 days is what you ought to be receiving. That's what you deserve. Now, the reality is if you can collect your invoices sent within 30 to 60 days, you're doing very well. That's the object, is to keep your aged accounts receivable under 60 days. I want to stipulate something that might be helpful to each of you. By doing one small thing, if you're not already doing this, you might find that your collections will improve. Too many firms include their reimbursables in the same invoice as their fees. That's not a smart thing to do. What you're creating is an environment in which a dime is holding up a dollar. Your reimbursables are a very small incremental portion of what your fees are that you're billing. So your invoices for your reimbursables should be separate so that if there's any question about anything that they seem to be unhappy with, they're not comfortable with, they can dispute that without affecting paying the fee invoice that you send separately. But too many firms are doing that. They're combining them, and their fee invoice is being held up because of a $3.86 charge that they don't understand and they don't agree with. It's just not good business. That shouldn't help collections for a lot of people who are doing that.
All right. There's a couple questions here that I'm going to go ahead and take these questions just because I have some something to say on this, and I'll let you, I'll, obviously if you have something to add, Steve, but it's regarding the more the mechanics of time tracking. During our last presentation, Mark LePage gave some good suggestions for time tracking for architecture firms. I'm going to throw a couple out there for the smaller firms that I've actually used before. One of them, and this is addressing Peter, your question, and a couple other questions out there. One of them would be Harvest, H-A-R-V-E-S-T. All of these are little, small, lightweight, downloadable applications that sit on your desktop. They have mobile. They plug into your mobile device as well, so you can, on the go, you can, you know, start or stop the timer at your meeting. They're actually pretty complex. Some of them can even track which window you're working in. So that's one. Harvest. Another one would be Toggle, T-O-G-G-L. And then the third one that I would recommend would be Hubstaff. And that one's actually kind of interesting if you're running a distributed model in your firm. In other words, if you're running a virtual firm where you have outsourcers or staff members in other locations, Hubstaff will actually, you can set it up to do screen captures to capture every so often what they're working on. And it will also automatically, you know, track time. So those are three suggestions on the time tracking for smaller firms. Steve, would you like to add to that?
No, I think that's great. I think it's a good idea to know about those things. Did you say Hubstaff, H-U-B?
Correct. Yep, Hubstaff. And I will type those in here to the chat window so everyone can get that. And also, we're going to have all these sessions transcribed, so we'll be sure to put notes in the videos, at the bottom of the videos when you come back. If you're thinking, hey, what was the thing they were talking about? You know, we'll have notes there so you can come back later. But let me go ahead and put this in the chat box also. So the first one was Harvest. Second one was Toggle, T-O-G-G-L, and the last one is Hubstaff, H-U-B-S-T-A-F-F. And I've used, like I said, I've used all of those, and they work pretty well. So that is in the chat window. You should see that. Well, if no one else has any further questions, Steve, I would like to thank you for your time, and please let us know more about what you do and your particular firm. And you know, if people want to reach out to you, how they go about doing that.
Well, the last page in the handout that you'll receive and on the slideshow gives you my contact information. What I can tell you is that I have specialized in dealing with small firms. I also serve medium-sized firms and large firms, but nevertheless, I am delighted to be able to serve my professional colleagues any way that I possibly can through my background and experience over the years, and if there's anything that I might be able to do to be of service to your firm, I suggest that you look at my bio. You can review my website if you'd like. You can go to my LinkedIn profile if you'd like. All of those things will give you more insight into my background, and I'd be very pleased and honored to be able to be of assistance to you if there's any way that I can. I thank you again for your attention and your interest in this topic, and I'm gratified by the number of excellent questions and the importance that I hear in your questions about wanting to do something to change the way things have been done. Good to you guys.
Excellent. You're getting a lot of thanks here. Steve, in the comments, people are saying thank you very much. Great information. They found it very valuable.